Hey guys, before we get into tonight's episode, we of course have some quick housekeeping notes to get through. First, I want to give a huge shout out to Brooke over at Convicted Podcast for getting all the way up to number 2 on the iTunes chart, and to the Podfathers over at Astonishing Legends for hitting their 20 million listen mark. I'll let both of those accomplishments sink in a second. Keeping in mind that both of these podcasts are independent podcasts with podcasters who are really kicking some major ass in podcast land. How's that for saying podcast about 100 times in 30 seconds? I do bring this up not only because they're friends of the show, but to reemphasize that things are gradually changing in the podcast world. So we as podcasters and listeners need to make sure that indie teams stay on everyone's radar. Now, my contribution to that will continue to be talking about and playing trailers for, when available, some of the great podcasts that I enjoy and think you all will too. One of my new favorites that I've been binging on is called Not Alone. Now, they're similar genre as Pints and Puzzles with a more paranormal tone to them. Sam and Jason have covered the spectrum of topics and frankly are the first to do decent coverage of the Black Knight satellite that, at least that I've heard on a podcast. All the stories are well-researched and very well-produced, and honestly, I think you'll enjoy them if you enjoy this show. I mean, come on. I haven't steered you guys wrong yet, have I? The second one I'm going to recommend is called Secret Transmission Podcast. Now, again, same genre with some Texas flair, so I'm going to put their trailer in right here.
Testing. Can anyone hear me? My name is Toby, and I'm the host of the Secret Transmission Podcast. We are a show that discusses the paranormal, conspiracies, the supernatural, UFOs, cryptozoology, and anything else weird. Our show is transmitted to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. You can also follow us on Twitter for updates, at Secret Trans Pod. So get ready to put on your tinfoil hats and come learn with us as we try to explain the unexplainable.
And lastly, I do want to give a little shout out to Christops over at the Eastern Border Podcast and apologize for any butchering of names on this episode. Okay, with all that out of the way,
come on, get to the show!
One witness described the event as follows. Suddenly, in the north sky, the sky was split in two, and high above the forest, with the northern part of the sky, appeared covered with fire. At that moment, there was a bang in the sky and a mighty crash. The crash was followed by a noise like stones falling from the sky or guns firing. The earth trembled. Tonight, we're going to take a look at the Tunguska event.
What's the podcast?
Play me a podcast.
You make me to my dad. My dad sure is the best.
The accompanying fireball was estimated between 50 and 100 meters wide, and it was seen as far away as London. It had estimated strength of 10 to 30 megatons of TNT and took down just under 500,000 acres of trees. Despite having a blast with 185 times the energy of the atomic bomb used on Hiroshima, there was no reported deaths or major injuries. Grant, the remote area near Tunguska River where the blast took place in 1908 didn't have any direct inhabitants, short of some very unfortunate reindeer. Nonetheless, it wasn't until just about 20 years after the explosion in 1927 that the first team of Russians explored the area. Surprisingly, they found it fairly untouched, with close to 80 million trees knocked over in what was described as a butterfly blast pattern. Also surprising, there was no blast crater from any type of impact or blast. So, what actually happened in the wilderness of Siberia? Spoiler alert, the official story was, it was a meteor. However, as with any good Pints and Puzzles story, there are a few great theories out there, from the more traditional to the more tinfoil hat side of things. As I said, officially the teams throughout the years have generally concluded that the Tunguska explosion was a meteor or an asteroid, the latter being much larger than the former. The speculation is there were two objects that came down, one impacting and creating nearby Lake Checo, and the other superheating and eventually exploding above the ground, causing the destruction known as the Tunguska event. Here's the catch, though. Studies were done on the lake and found samples to be much older than the Tunguska event, so that theory, well, doesn't hold water. Interesting aside here, when we have the airbursts that occur from meteors, that's actually due to the object superheating due to the front pressure or ram pressure, not actually due to the friction alone, which was an interesting little fact that I picked up while researching this case. I always thought it was due primarily just due to the friction from coming down through the atmosphere. Apparently, I was wrong. Go figure, I'm not a scientist. All of that said, there's a very good amount of evidence supporting the official meteor theory. After the original team investigated in 1927, additional exploration teams came in the 50s and 60s, and they found samples of silicate and magnetite in the soil. Combined with similar findings in 2013, and you can surely see why the meteor theory seems to be the most popular. Now, the caveat to these findings is that they were trace elements there, and the Earth is constantly bombarded with various types of space dust and rocks from outer space. So, in other words, the objects could have been from a more recent event that completely burned up or burned down to dust at all. Now, airburst meteors as a whole are kind of a rare event, but not unique to Tunguska by any means. Smaller airburst events occurred over Brazil in 1930, as well as in the Ural district of Russia back in 2013. Which, if you want to see some video of that particular event, it's a little freaky, but it's on YouTube, and it just shows this giant fireball coming down and essentially exploding over this town, which I don't believe anybody was injured from that, nobody died from that, but there were some minor injuries from glass and different things from the buildings exploding from the pressure waves. One viable alternate theory to the meteor is, of course, a comet. Now, rather than being mostly rock, like meteors and asteroids, comets are actually made of mostly ice. This distinction is important for two reasons. First, comets enter the atmosphere and they often look more colorful than your traditional meteoric shooting star, which could explain some of the eyewitness descriptions with the various colors and kind of more of an aurora borealis type of effect, rather than a pure fireball. Secondly, the ice would also evaporate at such a rate that it would most likely have an airburst as well and not leave any impact crater because it would have all evaporated and there'd be nothing left to hit the ground. So that could explain the lack of impact crater. Whether asteroid or comet, the most probable theory is that something did burst a few miles over the ground in Tunguska. However, it wouldn't be fun if we didn't discuss some of the more out there theories. Right after the break. As with all episodes of Pints and Puzzles, I'm just going to do a quick reminder mention to go to fultonforlife.com and check out all of their offerings, as they are the main reason you are hearing my lovely vocals about every other week or so on the podcast. However, tonight's break is something really special. As I'm sure you've noticed tonight, we now have a brand new intro to the show. This intro was done by the extremely talented team at PutThemInASong.com. Now, clearly Shane does phenomenal work and has a super quick turnaround time. I really can't say enough positive things about the whole experience overall. But here's the cool thing. We all know a good chunk of my listening audience out there right now are fellow podcasters. And as such, Shane is offering a $50 discount on most podcast offerings at PutThemInASong.com using promo code WELCOME. Now, this is everything from intro and outro tracks, mastering and scoring, and even backing tracks, although you have to buy two to get the discount there. If you want to see what all the mastering and scoring is about, check out this season of Truth and Justice with Bob Ruff. If you want to see a perfect example of what a difference this type of quality work really makes to a podcast. So again, that's PutThemInASong.com and use promo code WELCOME to get $50 off your order. And there's also custom tracks available for you non-podcasters out there as well. Okay, now it's tinfoil hat time. So beyond the generally accepted theories of an asteroid or a comet, there's no shortage of out there theories when it comes to the Tunguska event. Some of the more scientific ones are antimatter collision and a mini black hole passing through the Earth, even though there's no exit hole. But honestly, they're out of my wheelhouse and probably more suited for Dr. Cogswell over at the Mad Scientist podcast, which is now on Audio Boom, by the way. One of the less plausible and less scientific theories, though, is the blast was caused by an immense buildup and release of methane gas. We should put a sound effect there. While there's a large concentration of gas in the area, and there are other documented events related to these methane pockets, the amount of gas we're talking about here really blows the theory completely away for me. One of my more favorite out there theories is that the Tunguska event was caused by the great Nikola Tesla. So this particular theory was put out there by one of my classic favorite TV shows, Sightings, which for you youngsters out there, Sightings was basically Unsolved Mysteries, but focused completely on UFO and the extraterrestrial side of things. Anyway, the non-technical translation of this theory goes like this. Tesla lost his funding for his free energy tower projects and wanted to do one final test of his science. Tesla then tested his energy zap, for lack of a more technical term, to Admiral Robert Perry, who was conducting an expedition at the North Pole at the time. So he fired a test shot and, whoops, he missed and caused the mess over at Tunguska. So the biggest issue I have with this theory is that Tesla was known to be extremely precise with his calculations. So to me, at least, it's really unlikely that he would have quote-unquote missed, let alone by that much. So I'm not sure if I buy into this one, but hey, there's certainly no shortage of strange events when it comes to Tesla. From his inventions themselves to the alleged elimination and then cover-up of that same technology, there's literally a whole episode of content here. But as we say, that's another podcast. Now, another thing you might come across looking closer at the Tunguska event is a handful of eyewitness reports complaining of being sick after witnessing the event. These reports vary on the spectrum from temporary blindness to permanent blindness to longer-term sicknesses that seem to mimic radiation poisoning.
Are you telling me that this sucker is nuclear?
Well, maybe. The nuclear option, as it were, actually doesn't come from as much from a nuclear weapons testing. Those were many years off, remember. Rather, it comes from the theory that the explosion was due to a crashed UFO and the nuclear component came from that ship. Now, the UFO theory, for lack of a better term, does split off here into two components. The first being that there was, in fact, a meteor coming down, and an alien craft deliberately ran into the meteor in order to protect Earth and kind of caused a huge explosion, both nuclear from the ship as well as from the meteor and that side of things. The second arm comes from the alien ships looking for a freshwater source in nearby Lake Baikal, which is the largest by volume and deepest freshwater lake on Earth. Now, Lake Baikal in and of itself also has a huge number of UFO, USO, seal-human hybrids, all sorts of fun stuff. But as always, I will defer to Astonishing Legends, who did a phenomenal job on their Lake Baikal episode. So if you want some more information on that, definitely recommend checking that out. As for my take, as always, I still encourage all of you to come up with your own conclusions. But I'm actually going to do something a little different here and give you one theory that I put together in my head, at least, regarding the Tunguska event. Okay, let's assume that they are, in fact, some kind of alien base, structure, or at the very least, some other kind of alien beings in Lake Baikal. What if there was a catastrophic meteor heading to Earth? And these beings decided essentially to blast it out of the sky to protect us. Now, as out there as this sounds, it would actually cover the meteor theory, as well as the alien theory, and a slight spin on the Tesla ray zapping theory as well, too. There's even rumors in some quarters of the conspiracy web that the Siberian domes out there are actually part of an elaborate missile defense system or laser defense system. And depending on who you read, it's either invented by humans or by aliens to defend the Earth from just this type of event. Just my theory, but as always, I'd love to hear yours, so feel free to send me a tweet or email with your type of theory. All right, I think that will wrap things up for episode 10. I want to thank you all, as always, for spending some time with me this evening, as well as welcome any new listeners to the show. Just a reminder, I'm always open to discussions on Twitter at Pints and Puzzles or email at pintsandpuzzlespod@gmail.com. Also, just a real quick friendly reminder that the positive reviews on iTunes really do help out us little guys on the iTunes charts, so I would appreciate that if anybody is so inclined. If you have a negative review, just send those in tweets. As always, please check out our partners at FultonForLife.com, as they are the main reason that this episode was able to get produced. And I'm very happy to now add to my closing segment here. The intro music for this show was engineered and produced by PutThemInASong.com. So definitely go check out Shane's work, as well as send him a tweet on Twitter and tell him how much you love my new intro music here. Our beer review is coming up. For everyone else, I will talk to you in a couple weeks, hopefully on Wednesday again, as I think that's going to be our new release date going forward. Have a good night, everyone. Tonight's beer review is Flaming Fury from Captain Lawrence Brewing in New York. This is a peach sour, actually. What a shock. It's our third one. Clearly, it's a favorite style of mine. But it's by far the best one I've tried yet. I'll tell you why in a second. 6.5% ABV and 15 on the IBU scale. To me, this has all the elements of a peach sour without one element overpowering the other. On the sour side, you can tell this is natural sour rather than the lactobacteria or whatever injection they use that some places use to speed the process along. This is the more natural side of things, and you can really tell the taste if you like sours. Easiest way of explaining this to people who haven't tried this before is think sourdough bread rather than sour cream. The sour kind of coats your tongue a little bit rather than making your whole mouth pucker up. So I also noticed that the sour increases slightly the closer to room temperature that the beer gets, so another little tip there. The reason I get into any of that is twofold. One, it's a mini education for you newbies to sours. And two, because it does make a difference in the second part, the peach. You can really taste the peach flavors and they really come out because it's the smoother tart sour combination. And now some of the time you might get a touch of peach, but it gets overpowered with the sour. So it's not at all the case in this case. And one of the cool things that the sour does is it gets rid of some of the sweetness you get. So you get a real solid peach flavor, but you're not drinking a dessert, if that makes sense. Though, now that I think of it, it would complement a peach cobbler really nice. Pie. Okay. Officially on the website it says, Golden Sour Ale blended with Hudson Valley peaches, aged in French oak until the tart flavors of the beer meld with the sweet peaches. So hey, I must be getting better at this beer thing. As an aside, I did try one of their other sours that was barrel-aged, and it had no fruit flavor to it, but you really could taste the oakiness from these French oak barrels. It was really neat and a really cool kind of conceptual thing. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to end this, and we will talk to you in a couple weeks. Stay safe, everyone, and have a good night.
That was pretty awesome.
That was totes amazing.
Wowers. That's really great.
Great. Hey guys, I want to add some post roll on here for you extreme beer lovers. Basically, this is some raw footage from a couple weeks ago when my buddy Tareem and I went to the Yards Brewfest down in Philadelphia. So just a couple minutes of clips there for anybody that's still interested and still wants some more on the beer side. Feel free to check it out. Thanks. Have a good night.
Just the whole atmosphere is very different when you say than like, have you been to one of these before?
I have. This is actually the very last one that's going to be here before they move to their new location. So 10th anniversary and last big fest here.
That's great. Yeah, and it's really cool. There's a lot of beer. Like, there's, what, 60 different companies here?
Yeah.
Originally, when I was coming down here, I thought it was just going to be Yards, which I love Yards beer, but I was like, oh, this is great, but we've had all different kinds of beer so far, and there's the whole gamut, dark, light, sour, sweet, whatever you want. There's even a 15% ABV one here. Also, there's some pretty good food. They have the pig roasts, some pizza, some stuff inside.
And it's also important to know, like, this is also NFL Draft Weekend and Science Weekend, so there's two special brews that Yards only makes during this time that all coincided with this event and for the 10th anniversary. So there's some one-time things that you'll never have again.
What do you think? Any beer standing out for you so far?
Well, I'm a huge fan of Yards, and I love their Brubik's Cube, so I'm happy to have that. But there's one that's by Green King, which is their Ruddles, which is a very plain English-style ale that's just perfect for a day after having so many Big Bang beers. And, like, it's a really solid, basic English ale.
I don't know if I tried that one yet, but I'll definitely have to try that one. Yards-wise, they have their Baller one, which is a big one, with they added some coffee to it. It tastes like they just cracked up some coffee beans and put it in there, but it's really good. That's been one of my favorites so far from them. All right, we're probably going to get drowned out by the music now. So we'll touch base in a little bit. So we're at 5 o'clock now. It's the end of the Brew Fest. This is really fun to see what's left over at the end, I think. And it's funny that both of us kind of grabbed a beer that we're like, oh, let's just take that one before they throw the keg out. And they ended up being really good beers, right?
So yeah, they're great beers. Great end-of-the-day beers. Yeah, after everything. So the Pata Negra and the Export Stout.
A lot of fun today. The beer crowd is so different than, like, any other crowd that I've seen. Why do you think the beer crowd is different than other crowds?
Because there are adults that are drinking.
Yeah, but you get that a lot of other times, too, with, like, other...
No,
like,
you have people in adult bodies drinking.
It's true. You get really everybody here, and it's just people that like beer, and that's all they care about, is just having fun, relaxing. A lot of fun. Definitely going to do another one of these at their new location. Good way to close out the current Yards location down on Delaware Avenue.
Yep, I agree.
All right, you have anything else to add?
We need to do this again, and the summer just started, so let's do it.